The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
You're listening to Wrestling Night in Canada on the Shining Wizards Network with your hosts, Matt Copper, Dustin Maruca, and Snowy White.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. I'm Snowy White.
I'm Matt Copper.
I'm Dustin Maruca.
Hey, bros, what's going on?
Well, a lot has happened since the last episode. Yeah. for five events between NXT and AEW, and then another WWE pay-per-view that I guess we'll talk about.
yeah, and then on top of that, geez, we had Slammiversary as well. Like Impact is really, they're really making waves and making a lot of headlines with everything that's going on with that with them. Every once in a while, someone is like, oh, we have Impact is done, TNA is done, ring the death bell and all that, and yet, you know, they're still here and they're rocking and rolling, and it's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, quite a few members of the Future Endeavors Club showed up at Slammiversary.
The
Sorry? Future Endeavors Club.
That's a new stable. The Future Endeavors Club.
If we ever did Wrestling Night Canada shirts, can that be the back?
Oh. Future Endeavors Club. Yeah, it's something to talk about for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Well, even like I noticed in that one picture that they posted on social media of all the former WWE guys standing in the Impact interview area, all flipping off the camera.
Flipping off the bird.
Yeah. Kurt Hawkins, Brian Myers, as he's going by now, his real name, was wearing a shirt that just said, I got fired. and it looked a lot like Heath Slater's old He's Got Kids shirt.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing is part of the joke. But
oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Even I got that one. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So there's definitely a lot to talk about, not only with all of these great events that have kept us entertained, you know, these past, I don't know, it's been maybe about 3 weeks since we're able to sit down and do this, but the concept, the idea of Wrestling Night in Canada is we are three heavy music fans from the same hard music scene that all kind of came together through the love of pro wrestling as well. So with that in mind, and hailing from Winnipeg, okay, yeah, definitely think what has really caught my attention more than anything else in the entertainment world in general has been this little Twitter war between Chris Jericho and former Skid Row vocalist Sebastian Bach. It's definitely going to be interesting. It's something that I think for our turnbuckle talk we will get to a little later. But for now, let's kind of, if everyone's doing well and everyone seems to be happy and everyone's got a beer or a cold one or of their choosing, we'll jump right into this. And what's going on? Who wants to talk about what first?
Well, I just wanted to point out, first of all, that we are on episode 9, so we officially have more episodes than the Big Show Show on Netflix.
Right on.
We did it.
Well, we're the Big Show. Right on. Anyway, yes. Who wants to talk about what?
Okay, let's first start off by talking about the NXT event that took place over 2 weeks. It was they brought back the old WCW event and called these two episodes of NXT the Great American Bash, which coincidentally the first night took place on Canada Day.
Okay. Sorry. Before we get into the Great American Bash, I just have to check something here. Let me see. Great American Bash. Okay, I got the results. Okay, so Okay, that was the card. Okay, Dusty Rhodes won, wins the NWA title from Nature Boy Ric Flair. Magnum TA wins the Best of Seven. Oh, wait, that might not be the same.
I think you got to check the year on that one.
Oh, no! Oh! What? So what happened on this quote-unquote Great American Bash? Because, you know, the old-timer here didn't catch it.
Well, definitely it was purely coincidence that NXT decided to put on this two-week event the very same 2 weeks that AEW was putting on Fyter Fest. Definitely wasn't rushed at all. You definitely couldn't see the corner of the WWE old Scribble logo underneath the NXT logo on the banner.
Yeah. Because that was done, you know, last minute. Yeah.
But overall, I'd say that the quality of the event was pretty good. They appropriately brought back the red, white, and blue ring ropes. And, yeah, the stage set was... had a couple cars sitting on either end. I'm not a car connoisseur, so I'm sure people can tell me what models they were. I have no idea. Because, you know, cars, America.
Yeah, I don't know anything about cars. Yeah. I have a skateboard. I don't even have a driver's license.
Yeah, I have a bike.
So do I.
I have a bike and a bus pass.
Yep.
But, yeah, overall, the wrestling quality of the show was, as you can expect from any NXT event, was superb, I thought. Like, we're not going to go through both nights all in huge detail, but I'm just going to say there was a couple of highlights, I thought, were there was a strap match between Dexter Lumis and Roderick Strong of the Undisputed Era. Didn't have your traditional strap match rules where you had to drag your opponent to all four corners in order to win. It was just like pin or submission, but they're tied together. That's all it was. But the action was pretty good from both guys. Both guys are superbly talented. Mm-hmm. And I think Dexter Lumis just plays this catatonic character so well. Like, he doesn't show emotion or anything, but he's a baby face, I think.
He's basically the same character he was in TNA, just a little less creepy.
Okay, he's got that.
Remember, he was stalking Maria.
Right.
Yeah, that's him. Right. Yeah.
He's got like the emotionless face, that the mustache, and the Stranger Things music.
Yeah, basically. Pretty much.
Yeah, but I do like the character of Dexter Lumis, and I did like the pairing of him with him and Velveteen Dream, but obviously. The Dream is not on the show right now due to other things involving the Speaking Out movement.
And he was also in a car accident.
That too. So we'll have to see what develops there. But the main event of night one is Io Shirai versus Sasha Banks. And I got to say, these two put on an absolutely phenomenal main event. Like, it wasn't for the NXT women's title, but like, you see Sasha and Bayley wrestle on SmackDown or Raw nowadays, and you would be inclined to think that they're not that great, but when you put them in an environment like NXT, or you look back at their old NXT,
their Iron Man,
yeah, the Iron Woman match, and you look back at their old stuff, and they can still go. They are still superbly talented individuals, and it really showed on night one of Great American Bash how good they actually are. Mm-hmm. And the ending of the match was like, well, you know, typical heel hijinks where Bayley tried to distract the referee so Sasha could hit Io Shirai with one of the title belts. But then Asuka comes out from under the ring and sprays the green mist in Sasha's face, and which allowed Io to get the win. And so Io and Asuka were both standing in the ring with their titles at the end. And yeah, that's how night one ended, which I thought was really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then night two, the highlight of that one, I think, was the main event. Between Adam Cole, it was champion versus champion for both titles on the line. It was Adam Cole, the NXT champion, versus Keith Lee, the North American champion, and in a winner-take-all match. And Keith Lee came out on top. So he was, up until this week's NXT, both NXT and North American champion.
Mm-hmm.
He relinquished the North American title on this past week's episode of NXT.
Right, but, right.
Yeah, so he's... Yeah, he was the first ever double champion in NXT history. And the whole thing, like, aside from the dodgy undefeated streak, kind of reminds me of Goldberg when he was in WCW.
Except Keith Lee can wrestle.
Yes, but in terms of the fact that he was the mid-card champion, won the world title, had both of them relinquish the mid-card title, that's exactly what Goldberg did.
Right, right. Yeah, they did the same thing with the Ultimate Warrior during his run to the world title as well.
He relinquished the IC title.
After he got home.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the tradition is you have to relinquish one of them, and they generally give up, like, the secondary title. And I've got the world title, or I've got the North American title. Here, you can have the world title back.
I mean, both belts look great. But when it all comes down to it, like, why would you relinquish the top tier title for the mid card and be like, no, I'm fine.
No, I'm good. Yeah, no, but you know, over the years you've heard stories of you know, especially during the territory days, that for whatever reason, you know, the booker says, hey, we have to put the world title on you, and you're like, no, sorry, I can't do it because I got this going on. Like, the NWA wanted to give Nikita Koloff a run as NWA world title. He turned it down because his then wife was sick, you know, and ailing and all. So he really wasn't, he felt, you know, he wouldn't be able to be away from her at the time. So that's definitely commendable on his part. But, you know, it has happened, you know, in the past. Where, you know, they've said, you know, behind the scenes, thanks, but no thanks. And
well, you know, I believe a while back when Eddie Guerrero was WWE champion, I think the ratings were kind of suffering a little bit on SmackDown around that time, and he told them to take the belt off of him. At least that's what they say. That might just be revisionist history on the company's part, but I did hear that Eddie Guerrero said that if the ratings are falling, take the title off and put it on someone that will get the ratings back up, which I believe Kurt Angle was who took the title off.
I believe it was Kurt.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. But I don't necessarily agree with that. I think Eddie Guerrero is a much better character and what have you, but that's a whole other discussion. But those were my favorite moments of Great American Bash. Ducky, you got anything to add to that?
Shotzi running over. Sorry, I can't remember his name in NXT, but Robbie E with the tank was
fun. Oh, Robert Stone.
That's it.
Yeah. running over Robert Stone with the tank.
The horror film fan in me wants to ask, okay, who in the WWF booking is the horror film fan too? Dexter Loomis? Okay, like that name? Okay, I'm like, all right, I can get behind that because, of course, you guys would know who Dexter is, but Loomis, if you don't know your Halloween movies. Doctor, Yeah, so I thought the first time I heard that, I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is cool. All right.
Yeah, it's a play of Samuel Loomis from the Halloween movies.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, who has what now?
The Two Nights of Fyter Fest. AEW Fyter Fest.
Okay, yeah. Those I caught. The funny thing about these, though, what I'm going to say right up front, that and then the fight for the Fallen afterwards. Okay, these are supposed to be like a pay-per-view stature type cards, and they just didn't feel like that.
Well, no, but you also have to take the state of the world into consideration.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's rhyme and reason, but as I'm watching it, I'm not like getting excited for, like, I'm getting excited to watch Dynamite. I'm not getting excited to watch a pay-per-view.
Exactly. And the commercial breaks kind of took you out of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Yeah, I agree with you on that. But like the thing about Fyter Fest and Fight for the Fallen last year was that those were free events that were given away anyway.
Because
they were like filler events in between Double or Nothing and All Outs, just tied you over and until Dynamite debuted, I guess.
Ah.
So I guess this year they figured, oh, let's just give them away on free TV.
No, that makes sense. What were some of your highlights from Fyter Fests?
Tag team title match between Best Friends and Omega and Paige was really good, as you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else? There was
the FTR, Pentagon, FTR and Young Bucks against
The Lucha Bros.
Lucha Bros and Lucha Bleeds. Yeah. Fucking good.
Yeah, that match just kind of really showcases just the depth that the AEW tag team division has. Like they mm-hmm. had four great teams like in one match. And now a case can probably be argued, well, maybe they should have had two matches and all that. But I think it's a case of trying to get, because you only have X amount of time because it's a TV show as opposed to an actual pay-per-view and all that. So, yeah, that definitely showed that. Was night two the night what that was when Taz presented the FTW title to Brian Cage,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that's the one, because they couldn't have the world title match because Moxley was still quarantining.
Right. Now that's okay. Like I understand the concept of the FTW title, the history, where it came from. It was Taz's title in ECW, and it's the badass, fuck the world, and all that. I kind of get it, and I have to admit, I kind of popped when I saw when they brought it out, but I was just like, I don't know if Cage is the guy for this title. Really, and like I get it, they're using it to enhance the angle and all that, but I'm just like, I would think that this title, okay, because as it played out, you would think, okay, Taz would present this FTW title to Cage as a, well, you know, you almost had him. You should have had him. You know, and this isn't exactly how it played out, but like the angle's not over yet. I don't believe so. Like I could see them bringing this title in, this quote unquote title in, after he unsuccessfully wins the world title from Moxley, and then to placate him. You know, Taz comes out and says, oh, my boy got screwed. You know, he was within a hair's breadth. You know, he definitely should have been champion. So I'm going to present an even more important title to Mr. Cage. I'm going to present to him the FTW title and all that. I think that probably would have been better served at that point. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just the timing thing.
The finish for the match, though, did end with Taz throwing in the towel for Brian Cage because Moxley was targeting his bicep that was surgically repaired. So
right.
I don't know how it would have played out in that instance, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I just, like I said, I don't think that the angle is quite over yet. And since you kind of brought that up, I'm just like... I don't know about that, because it's like, yeah, I get... They're pushing that his arm was hurt and all that, but they're bringing Cage in as this killer, you know, as this unstoppable machine. They gave him the FTW title, and they're gonna job him out by throwing in the towel like that. Like,
no, they justified it as Taz protecting his investment,
right, but. Like his first match in? Like, come on.
His first world title match, yeah. It's,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like it's no. You guys are, this is the first step into burying him. Like, what's going on here?
I don't think he's gonna get buried because, like, this past week on Dynamite, they kind of started like almost like a tag team feud, I guess, with like Darby Allin and John Moxley against Brian Cage and Ricky Starks.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see where that goes. I don't really. Mm. I kind of see Ricky Starks as being like a punching bag for this feud.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because I really like Ricky Starks. I liked his work in NWA.
Oh yeah.
I popped pretty hard when he was the surprise opponent for Cody in the Open Challenge.
Oh, for sure. Me too. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see where it goes. I don't think we've seen the last of Brian Cage. Although, yeah, they could have.
Oh no. Yeah.
Like I think they kind of gave him a bit of a giving him the world title shot. His first night in the company was a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of does kind of like make a joke out of the whole ranking system, you know? It's like the whole idea of the ranking system is that the guy with the most wins moves up the card and gets the title match.
Mm-hmm. They went from we're the alternative to the WWF. We're the sports. We're the sports focused federation. We're gonna have rankings. We're gonna have this. We're gonna have that. And then the guy gets a title match. You know? Sorry. Yeah.
The sport was the sports focused federation. The SFF.
Yeah. Well, I'm seeing more and more. Okay, now of course the AEW has only done one of the cinematic matches. Okay, but I don't know how much of an alternative right now AEW is to the WWF throughout all this. It's definitely my preference, though. I can't remember the last time I actually sat through a Raw and a SmackDown.
Yeah.
It's getting harder. Yeah. What was your reaction to Nyla Rose's new manageress?
No. Vicky Guerrero.
Vicky Guerrero.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I could do without her entrance theme. It's terrible.
Oh, her entrance theme is like, yeah, not great.
Oh, okay.
It's just her saying "excuse me," but it's like remixed into like sort of like over a hip hop beat. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She shouldn't have. The only entrance that she should have is her screaming.
Yeah,
her doing the excuse. Like, no music, no nothing. Just, you know,
just her like behind the curtain, and all of a sudden you just hear "excuse me."
That's right. And this character, in regards to real life, is more relevant than ever because you guys know what a Karen is these days.
Oh yeah, right? She's like Vicky's the Karen.
Oh god, she's got the haircut and everything.
Well, she's been doing this character long before Karen was even a term.
Oh, I know, but it's just it's perfect now.
Yeah. I just find it funny that people think Karen is a Karen, being called a Karen is offensive.
Oh, it's racist.
Oh yeah, I'm hearing that. Yeah, it's sexist, racist against women. It's like, okay, sit down.
Chili's.
Yeah.
Basically. Stop being a Karen and we won't call you one.
Yeah.
But
the only thing I don't like about that is that I have a cousin named Karen and I don't know her opinion on this, but she's not like that at all.
Right. Yeah. All the poor nice Karens in the world. Yeah.
It's okay. One of my ex's mothers is like that.
Oh God.
But anyway.
Yeah, but apparently, though, Rose can actually talk. The idea of putting a manager is on some of these big heels and all that is the mouthpiece for ones that can't talk. Mm-hmm. Yokozuna, you know? But apparently, Rose is actually pretty damn good on the mic. They're just not giving her the chance.
Yeah, I agree. Managers should be reserved for wrestlers that are physically able but don't actually have the voice. People like Brock Lesnar or Brian Cage, I guess.
Right.
Roman Reigns should have.
I guess it's more of a heel thing.
Yeah, but he's gotten better, but not much. Mm. He's still pretty terrible.
On the mic. Yeah, at least he's moved on past Suffer and Succotash.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, but no, I do agree that managers should be reserved, or MVP and Bobby Lashley more recently. Even though
Bobby can talk.
Bobby can't really. I don't think he can talk that well, but he was better in TNA. But also MVP is still wrestling, so it's kind of a gray area there a little bit.
What is their fucking stable called now?
Hurt Business.
Yeah. Like, guys, come on.
Well, there are rumors like they on this past Raw that they aligned themselves with Shelton Benjamin, and they were seen talking to Ron Simmons in the back. So there's rumors circulating that we're going to see a new Nation of Domination. Probably not the best time for that, but but it looks like it's happening.
Yeah. Wow. Holy shit! Yeah, now it's not this political climate. Forget it.
Sorry to cut you off. And if you think about it too, Big E's on a solo right now.
Oh yeah, because Kofi's out for 6 weeks. Yep. Woods is still out for a few months.
Yeah,
yeah.
Get Woods in there. I mean, get fucking Big E in there. Boom.
And move Big E over to Raw.
Powerhouses will be Big E and Lashley of Nation.
Ooh,
new Nation.
Yeah,
well, I can see them trying it.
Yeah, well, I guess time will tell.
Yeah, I don't know how politically the field is for that right now.
Is what I would do. Have them turn heel, jump to Raw, join this Hurt Business crap. Have it go really well. Like, he's like the best heel of the group. Then have Kofi come back the same time as Woods come back. And then they show up and be like, let's get the band back together, blah, blah, blah. And then they just destroy them.
Oh, like the Big E doesn't go back to the New Day?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I guess we'll see the return of Big E Langston.
Yeah.
Yeah. His old persona. Like when he was Intercontinental Champion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Vince will ruin it. Never mind. He'll join the Nation and they'll just call him Langston.
No, the whole thing is just going to be, I don't know. The whole thing seems a little too tone deaf right now for what's going on in the United States.
That's very true.
But anyway.
Yeah. So do we have anything else from Fighter Fest or Fight for the Fallen that we want to...
That falls down anyway, which was good.
Wasn't that on Dynamite?
Yeah.
Oh, the most recent Dynamite?
Oh, wait, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't part of either event. But I will say, that was pretty good. Brought me back to the Attitude Era.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, if I'm being perfectly honest, I think this past week's episode of Dynamite was probably the best episode of Dynamite since lockdown, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Dare I say? The Eddie Kingston's promo was pretty fucking awesome.
Oh yeah, yeah. Talking about marking out when someone comes out, I'm like, holy shit, because I wasn't expecting that at all.
At ICW No Holds Barred 3 a couple weeks ago, after his match, he just went on a rant, like and fucking destroyed people. And then at the end, he called Cody out. He was like, man up or something. I'll have to send you that promo because half of the things he said I cannot repeat.
Okay.
It was bad. He threatened to fight people in the crowd because a lady told him to shut up and he just went off on her. It was pretty great.
that's the great thing about being a heel. Someone yells at you or whatever. You could just, shut up, you old bag.
Basically. He didn't call her an old bag. He called her a few other things.
No doubt.
He's a heel and he's really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing him come out on Dynamite, it's like, okay. And he called him out 3 weeks ago.
No music either. He just came out with a microphone. Right. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he called him out 3 weeks ago, but Matt Tremont's been calling Cody out for 2 years.
Mm. Well, I guess maybe Matt Tremont will be on next week's Dynamite.
There we go.
But before Matt, because Matt's thinking of retiring, Cody should bring him just one Matt Cody match.
Yeah.
And I like the idea. Like, keep me guessing. Like, I don't go to the dirt sheets or the dirt websites, you want to call it now or whatever. I don't bother with all that crap. So when this open challenge, if they keep bringing in guys, even if it's just for a one-off, you've got my attention with that. If you keep bringing in unexpected guys like that, like, for sure.
Yeah, like, when they do that in WWE, you're only ever going to get guys who are contracted with a company. So it kind of limits it.
And then the surprise of, oh, look at the next guy we're not going to see on the main roster for 2 years. We're going to ruin anyway.
Well, the best thing that ever came out of that was when Kevin Owens versus John Cena.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, I'll be honest here. That was probably one of the best John Cena matches I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That was a really good match.
But like we mentioned earlier, like the whole surprise element, like when Ricky Starks showed up. Because because NWA has been inactive during this whole lockdown thing. And I was really getting into NWA Power. And I was, like, getting familiar with the faces there. And I was, like, yeah. So I knew who Ricky Starks was. He won the television title and then lost it to Ziggy Starks. But, yeah, and then he just shows up on Dynamite. And I was, like, holy shit, I know who that is. I know how good this guy is. This is kind of a big deal.
Oh, for sure. For sure, for sure. And hopefully AEW, even if they don't keep these guys on, if they can give them work until, you know, Billy Pumpkins gets the NWA going again, then that's a good thing.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing an NWA AEW invasion angle if it all came down to it.
Eventually, like, not
yeah.
give it a couple years.
You wouldn't want to see Maldis or Moxley versus Aldis?
I would, but give it a couple years still. When for both leagues have been, you know, 5 years active simultaneously, and then have the big Super Bowl type card. That would be amazing. Yes.
It'll happen and we'll just be like, called it.
Yeah.
3 years ago.
Well, yeah. And also that being said, in terms of the open challenge for the TNT title, which they really need to get a new belt for that thing. Like, I'm sorry. I know it's not finished, but I hate the red strap. I just hate it. But I think it
would look better. I hate the name of the title.
Yeah. If it was black and gold, like, I know that's stereotypical or just like, considered generic, but it looks good. It looks like champion. It looks like a championship. Mm-hmm. But anyway, having guys like, I don't know, like if Cowboy James Storm came in, or Eli Drake, or yeah, anybody from NWA right now that's not currently working, since most of them do have open contracts.
Right.
Why not?
give them work. Give them work. Yeah.
Yeah, because Eli Drake, guy's great on the mic. He can work a crowd.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eli Drake's always been able to work a crowd, though.
Yeah, even when he was in NXT. Or what was his name? He had a very generic name when he was in NXT. But whatever. That's we won't talk about that.
Nope.
I'll remember him for his whole, like, dummies thing in Impact Wrestling.
Yes.
And, And the whole thing that he... That one Christmas... special episode of NWA Power where he got absolutely drunk and just started going, yeah! And then that became a thing.
That's great work if you can get it.
Yeah. The whole crowd was like, every episode of Power after that, he would come out and the crowd would just be going, yeah! Yeah! Let me talk to you.
I want to quickly mention one thing that's happening at GCW Homecoming Part 2 right now. Leo Rush's final match is today.
Oh, yeah, against Janela.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. His final match ever.
Yep.
What's he doing after this?
I don't know. No? I'm staying home with the wife.
Getting a real job?
But his matches with Janela and CZW were good.
But his matches in NXT were good. Like, he's a phenomenal wrestler. He's just got a bit of an attitude problem.
Yeah, basically.
He just seems kind of young to be throwing in the towel already. Like,
he's what, 20?
25?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year he was calling himself the 24-year-old piece of gold. Or the man of the hour, the moth. But, yeah. Yeah, you got the goats, the moths, all the...
There we go, yeah. Greatest of all time, yeah. I know that one. I know that reference, yeah.
So many wrestlers call themselves the goat.
I'm sure some old-timers like me are probably giving AEW a hard time about with the Jericho Orange Cassidy angle going on right now. And the dropping of the orange juice.
That was awesome.
Okay, now I'm sure some old timers like me are like, oh yeah, I saw that. You know, the new blood in WCW, you know, when Vampiro dropped the blood on Sting and all this is like, yeah.
The brood in WWE used to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, okay, we've seen this before, but I thought it worked great because it was the orange juice and it's Orange Cassidy and he's sending a message to Jericho. Yeah, it's been done before, but it works. It worked so well.
It did, and like, I loved how Jericho just absolutely freaked out afterwards.
I love Ortiz selling it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, when he was like lying on the ground, there was like orange peels in there too. Like those little like. I don't know if they were like half oranges or just orange peels, but yeah. From that, like, that could have hurt somebody.
Yeah. But Ortiz selling altogether is fucking amazing.
But like I
want to see Ortiz versus Dolph Ziggler because they both sell.
Oh yeah. Well, like the whole thing about that angle that really like had me scratch my head is like Orange Cassidy's character is that he's just as lazy as humanly possible. Yet somehow you're meant to believe that he actually like constructed this whole plan where he got this bag of orange juice and oranges, strung it up above the ring, and actually talked to someone in the back about when to actually release it.
Right.
It just kind of seems a little out of character.
Like the ladder matcher is like, how do I win?
Yeah, I have to climb. And a ladder. Yeah, he's just like stabbed. puts his hands in there.
But well, like, the ladder.
I like the angle despite the fact that it does kind of break character for Orange a little bit, but I like his lazy half-assed thumbs down kind of made up for it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, also led to a absolutely fantastic match between the two. Also, I got to point out that the first episode of Fighter Fest, or night one of Fighter Fest, when Jericho came out, it was Canada Day. He was doing guest commentary, and he was absolutely wearing this god awful, tacky looking jacket with maple leaves all over it. in true Jericho fashion,
Just
like the worst possible fashion items look like, or just like making them work.
So he's doing the Don chair.
He's doing the John Cherry, Bruce Campbell kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mix between Don Cherry and Bruce Campbell. That's Chris Jericho's
game. There we go. Yeah. I can get behind that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, overall, all these events between NXT and AEW over the past few weeks and the recent, more recent episodes of just regular old NXT and Dynamite have been great.
Mm-hmm.
No complaints on my part. I'm really looking forward to Killer Cross or Karrion Cross versus Keith Lee for the NXT title. That is going to be absolutely stellar. I know they're two both big hoss wrestlers, but they're both physically capable of doing more than just throwing punches.
Yep.
So yeah. That's gonna be great.
Right on. Did you guys manage, like, I wasn't able to, unfortunately, while this was being aired live on pay-per-view, or quote-unquote live on pay-per-view, I had business that I had to attend to for our brother program, Radioactive Metal, so I wasn't able to catch Slammiversary. And the next day, you know, I kind of sat down on YouTube and I caught the highlights. I caught, you know, a good hour's worth of highlights, a good 45 minutes, kind of kicking myself because it looked like this event was really good. And, you know, there's even people saying, you know, online and all that, that, you know, this is, they weren't expecting something as good as what Slammiversary was. Did you guys, how much of this did you guys catch?
I've only seen highlights, but from a lot of people, like the general consensus about Slammiversary this year is that this is the first time that Impact has felt relevant since, like in 10 years.
Since before Dixie showed up.
Yeah, since before the Hogan Bischoff era.
Never again.
Yeah, a lot of future endeavored WWE guys made their way onto the show. And
a lot of old TNA guys came back.
The Motor City Machine Guns are back.
That was going to be the first thing I said. Yeah. Wow.
They won the tag titles on an episode of on the episode of Impact after 2 days later.
Yeah.
They beat the North, and the North have been tag champs for a long
time. Over a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the most underrated teams, like in pro wrestling in general, has been Paige and Alexander, and they were supposed to come here for an indie card and all that, and then of course all this COVID crap.
He's a good dude. He was here for a WPW show once.
He's a good dude, but his name is the All Ego.
Yeah. He's hilarious. Paige is awesome. That was the same show with Shotzi Blackheart and PCO.
Oh yeah. All right. Matt Probe, I think, picked Shotzi up from the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shotzi's Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah, and now she works for the enemy.
Yeah.
She's a superstar, and she's an audience member for Raw and SmackDown.
Yep.
You can clearly pick her out.
Well, you see the green hair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, even though they all have to wear masks now, which I understand completely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can.
And that was Kevin Owens' idea.
Yeah. He's a family man.
Yep.
Yeah.
So is the WWF actually, and we're going to get a little off topic here, surprise, surprise, but is the WWF actually getting their shit together when it comes to this COVID thing?
Yeah, before, like Taz said, they were running a sloppy shop.
But yeah.
Now I think they're actually taking it seriously, because within the company, there's not many people that are actually there at the performance center. Because, everybody else is at Impact now. All the producers who got laid off, they're not there because they don't really need to be, but they could still be getting paid because, you know, $500 million in cash reserves. But we've already talked about that.
Yeah. We can go on for another hour about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Billy Kidman and Shane Helms are getting paid for no reason at all. But anyway. Yeah, they actually are getting their shit together now. All the Performance Center recruits, as they are officially referred to, are wearing masks in the crowd. And apparently, if you are seen on camera without your mask, it's $500 fine.
Yep.
Okay, see, yeah, because they have to backpedal now, because I'm sure, like, Vince definitely, I don't think, wanted people on camera with masks, because that would be a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
You know, and like, he's so far in bed with fucking Trump too. And I'm going to, don't worry, guys, I'm not going to get on my snowbox about Trump, but he's got the same mentality as, you know, pretty much any of these big Republicans and all that. anyone that gets sick in the WWF. Okay. It's on Vince's head. It is, like,
starts at
the top.
Yeah, like, and it even branches out to other companies. Because,
no,
like,
not Cedric.
No, it's
Apollo Crews.
Sorry?
Apollo Crews.
Oh, yeah.
Has it? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, but like, you look at Renee Young. She had it, and because of that, that ruined the main event for Fighter Fest Night 2.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. That irritated the piss out of me.
Yeah, the sloppy shop comment. But, so, like, within the whole company, I think 24 people. There was like 24 active cases.
Yeah.
That one week.
Holy shit! Okay.
However many more after that.
How many cases do we have active in the province of Manitoba right now?
There were six more today.
I think it's 58 as of today.
So the WWF alone has half of the cases that our entire province has. Yep. Okay, yep. America, you gotta get your shit together with this.
That's just a fraction, like a mere morsel of the entire state of Florida, which I think is up to like $6,000 now.
Oh, God. Yeah. And I have friends and loved ones that live in Florida, and I'm freaking out for them.
Yeah, like, my parents own property in Florida. They can't go down there this year because of the shit.
Yeah. And of course, what we do, okay, like in the music scene and what I do for Radioactive Metal, we rely on the border being open.
Yep.
You know, to bring bands in and all that to tour in Canada, but that's totally another thing. So I got to pull myself back because I'll just go.
All right. Let's talk about the shitty horror show, which was Extreme Rules.
The horror show, which is aptly named.
Yeah.
Bruce Prichard's attempt at a PG horror movie.
Oh, God. Paul Heyman. If Paul Heyman were to write that, it'd be so much better.
Oh, agreed. Yeah.
Okay. I just cracked another beer because if we're going to talk about the WWF Extreme shit show here, I need a drink.
Yeah, good call, actually. You good?
I'll take a third.
Okay. All right. So.
Matt, kick it off.
Yeah. Okay. So the show opened with a pretty good montage, with this pretty good voiceover that actually set the theme for the whole show rather well. But other than that, it just it went down the shitter right quick. Like, first of all, like the Asuka Banks match didn't really have a clear winner. That whole situation was confusing. Asuka sprays mist, or Asuka went to go spray the mist in Banks' face, but accidentally hit the referee, and then Bayley hit Asuka with the title belt, and then Bayley took the ref shirt off of the referee, put the shirt on herself, counted the three, declared Sasha Banks the winner and the Raw Women's Champion, bullied the ringside guys into ringing the bell, the timekeeper, into ringing the bell, and then they just sort of left with the belt. Mm-hmm. And they didn't follow up on it until the next night. So that was confusing as all hell.
Yeah.
Okay, so how exactly does, like, are they saying, well, she had a ref shirt on and they rang the bell, so it's now legit? Is that what the way they could
they have said that it wasn't legit, but they said, like, Sasha didn't actually win the match, but she's still in possession of the Raw Women's title belt.
So okay, good. Because it's like, but that's something that the WWF would do. Well, our hands are tied because she had a shirt on, and
Well,
that was a great Richard idea.
Yeah, on commentary, they were like, Michael Cole was even saying, like, it's like, this isn't official, and Corey Graves is all like, oh, she did what she had to do, or she was just being a good friend or whatever. But
okay.
Oh no, it was Samoa Joe. Sorry, it was the Raw commentary team. It was Zach Phillips were all like, this can't be legit, and Samoa Joe was all like, oh no, she's just being a good friend. But that was one of the faulty parts of the show.
What about MVP declaring himself as US champion?
Oh yeah, because Apollo Crews, who is the current US champion, could not be there to defend the U.S. title. So MVP declared himself the winner by forfeit, took the U.S. title belt, like the newly christened one, which Apollo Crews hasn't actually held yet, and just kind of walked away with it and said he was the champion, even though he's not.
Even though they could have saved that for the fucking pre-show.
Yeah. Now instead we got Owens versus Murphy on the pre-show.
Match of the night.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and then, oh boy.
Seth versus Ryan.
Yeah, the eye for an eye match.
Oh boy, yes.
Literally, to win this match, you had to extract an eyeball from your opponent's head, and that was I was, don't get me wrong, I was curious about how this was going to play out. That's the only real reason why I had any interest invested in this match.
It was a decent match, too.
Like, yeah,
The wrestling part of it was good.
It started off with Seth Rollins coming out, and he had a pair of pliers on him, which presumably he was going to use to extract the eyeball, but after that, they never really came into play at all.
Seth tried to kill him with rebar.
Oh, yeah, there was a rebar under the ring that they tried to use, but in the end, they just ended up going with the exact same situation that got Rey Mysterio's eyeball injured in the first place was Seth Rollins shoving Rey Mysterio's head or his eye into the corner of the steps.
Which the camera angle on that was basically the camera angle on every John Cena five knuckle shuffle for the past 10 years,
mm-hmm.
which it clearly fucking missed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, he shoves his eye into the steps, steps back, Rey's holding his eye, screaming, and then Seth Rollins goes to attack him again, stops dead in his tracks, and then just kind of like makes like just looks mortified, and then like turns around like he's gonna puke. And then Rey Mysterio's like holding his hand up to his eye, and you can kind of see like a ping pong ball in between his fingers covered in fake blood. And then Seth Rollins puked all over the ringside area because of that. So he's supposed to be this like cold, unfeeling heel, but really he's a wuss.
Right.
I don't get it. And then the doctors brought Rey to the back. And then after that, they interviewed Bailey, and then she kind of seemed remorseful at first and then kind of cracked jokes about Rey losing his eye. So Bailey is actually harder than Seth Rollins.
sounds like it. What the fuck is with Vince and shit like this? Like puking and pissing and all that. Like, here's a guy that's in his 70s. Like, the guy's got the mentality of a 12-year-old.
Oh, he thinks dick and fart jokes are hilarious.
Yeah, like, what the, like, come on. okay, so now what's Rey going to do? Is he going to have, like, a 365-day Nick Fury Halloween costume prop on his head? Like, is he going to have the patch for the rest of his career or something?
Well, he doesn't even have a contract right now. He was wrestling without a contract.
Apparently, he's in talks to signing again.
Okay. Yeah, he asked for a raise, and then they denied it, so he refused to sign a new contract.
But it's Rey Mysterio. I'd fucking give him a raise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's worth
$1 million in cash and reserves.
Okay.
That was kind of like...
Okay, sorry to cut you guys off, but my ride is here.
Okay, man. I'm sure we can get together like next weekend. I'm sure we got some sort of music or wrestling event to talk about. So talk to you then.
Yeah, see you, Duck.
Okay, so what have we still got? This is a fucking horror show, and you know what? If I had to sit through this event... Like, take my eye out, you know? But okay, this is what we do. This is what we signed up for. So, the swamp match. What exactly are they calling it?
It was called the Wyatt Family Swamp Fight, I think it was called.
Okay.
There were no rules established for this match because it wasn't really a match. It was just another one of those cinematic things that WWE puts on, similar to the Boneyard match.
Right.
Nowadays. Or similar to stuff that Bray Wyatt's done in the past with his cult leader character, which this was a return of, by the way.
Okay.
Over the past couple of weeks. Bray Wyatt decided that the best way to get Braun Strowman's head was to bring back the Eater of Worlds as opposed to the Firefly Funhouse Bray Wyatt, which I thought was actually pretty cool. Because I know that Bray Wyatt wasn't really the most successful, like, win-wise character, and it kind of took away a little bit of his imagery as a credible threat. But that being said, I did like the character, and I liked how he cut promos and all that stuff. And like just like the certain cadences in his voice when he spoke with that character just kind of made you feel uneasy. It was like kind of like Waylon Mercy. Remember that guy?
Oh, yes. Lives are going to be in Waylon Mercy's hands. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, it was kind of similar to that. Like when Eater of Worlds Bray Wyatt came back, it was just like Braun Strowman just had this like slack jawed look on his face. He's like, "What's wrong, brother? You've seen a ghost."
Okay. So they were fighting in a swamp.
Like a
facsimile of a swamp.
Yeah, like it started off with Bray Wyatt was sitting in his old rocking chair as he used to do, in the middle of this dirt road, and then Braun Strowman drove up in his gigantic redneck pickup truck that he drives nowadays, because I guess that's his gimmick, is that he's just this really tough redneck.
Okay.
So he drives up, walks up to Bray, they exchange a few words, and then the lights go out, and the lights come back on, and Bray Wyatt's gone. Just the rocking chair is sitting there.
The lights went out in the swamp.
Yeah, I guess the headlights of Braun Strowman's truck went out, I suppose.
Because there's nothing I hate more when I'm out in the swamp or out in the forest or whatnot, and then the lights go out on me and then come back.
Yeah, the moon temporarily stopped reflecting the sunlight.
That's it. Wow. Okay, sorry. Okay.
But then after that, Braun Strowman picked up the rocking chair and threw it at this sign that said, "Abandon all hope, winter here."
Ah.
Yeah, typical takeoff of the fine. What was that story? Dante's Inferno.
Right.
But anyway, it was a play on that. And then Braun Strowman starts walking through this like heavily wooded area, getting attacked by these unknown assailants, or like, I guess one of them actually was dressed very similarly to Luke Harper, even though they didn't really show his face. And then so he fights off these guys for a little while, and then Braun Strowman encounters this other guy wearing a black sheep's mask, knocks him down with a shovel, and then he takes off the sheep's mask, and it's another Braun Strowman. So Braun Strowman got taken out by himself.
Okay. There was two Braun Strowmans.
There was current Braun Strowman, and then there was black sheep Braun Strowman from the Wyatt family. Knocked him down with a shovel, and then after Braun Strowman realized that it was himself that knocked him down, black sheep Braun Strowman then knocked. He did that old, you know, that thing in horror movies where like someone like takes a shovel or something and like swings it at the camera and makes you think that the person's been knocked out.
Right.
That's what they did. Yeah. And then Braun Strowman wakes up in a chair, or chained to a chair, like just in this random shack that's part of the Wyatt compound, I guess. And then Bray Wyatt strolls in with his lantern and his old music playing. And then he starts delivering one of those old rambling, nonsensical promos that he used to back when he was this character.
Right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like the old Charles Manson type style.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, with the southern drawl. Even the whole it's like, "You came here looking for answers, but I just added more questions," or whatever, that type of shit.
I remember, which the first time that, you know, I saw him with the lantern and that ring entrance and all that, like that was actually pretty cool, and it was organic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then he kind of just starts taunting Braun Strowman while Braun Strowman is, I use the term tied down very loosely, because you can very clearly see that he was sitting in this rocking chair with these chains that were only draped over his arms. Nothing was actually tied up. But yeah, Braun Strowman had to like fake it and like look like he was actually tied down, even though like in reality he could probably break that chair if he just like flexed a little bit.
Right.
So then after that, this woman comes out dressed all in black with like a black veil, which I'm assuming is supposed to be Sister Abigail.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She comes out holding a python. The python bites Braun Strowman. He passes out again, and then he wakes up in the field next to a fire pit, gets attacked by more random guys, sets one of the random guys on fire. That guy just runs off into the bush. And then after that, Braun Strowman hears a voice calling to him, sees the woman that was presumably Sister Abigail, turns out to be Alexa Bliss.
Okay.
Yeah, stay with me.
Okay, well, I perked up when you said Alexa Bliss, trust me.
Yeah. So this woman who's supposed to be Sister Abigail ends up being like this image of Alexa Bliss that Bray Wyatt is projecting with his spooky powers. Okay. And yeah, basically trying to like lure Braun Strowman over. And it was like showing footage of when Braun Strowman and Alexa Bliss were this mixed tag team during that mixed tag team tournament thing.
Right. Yeah.
When they were like teasing them becoming a couple or something. And she's like saying stuff like, I know you always wanted to be together. Come home, Braun. Come home. And then he walks over to her, and then she kind of walks off into this mist. And then Bray Wyatt comes out of the mist, attacks Braun Strowman. And then Braun Strowman chokeslams Bray Wyatt into a boat. The boat goes sailing off into the lake. And then all of a sudden the boat turns around, comes back. No Bray Wyatt in the boat. So this is starting to get into like Friday the 13th territory. Yeah,
I was just thinking that. It's like, this is oh my God. All right, sure. All right.
And then, Bray Wyatt attacks Braun Strowman again. They start fighting on the dock. Braun kicks Bray Wyatt into the lake, looks around in the lake just to make sure he's not there. Braun thinks it's over. The little ending graphic that shows up at the end of every wrestling show comes up, fades to black, but then it comes back. Bray Wyatt jumps out of the swamp, pulls Braun Strowman in, and then they fight the water for a little while. Then they're both underwater. The water starts glowing red, starts bubbling, and then the Fiend comes out of the water, looks down at the camera, and it starts doing that laughing track that of Bray Wyatt's that plays on a loop every time the Fiend attacks somebody.
Right.
And that was the end of the show.
Oh my God. This is right out of Freddy versus Jason. Like you called it. It's like, oh my God. But the producers of Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, though, they're having a fit over this. It's like, what, you call this horror? You know, you guys are rank amateurs. You guys don't know what the fuck you're doing. No, you gotta do this, and this. As you're telling me all of this, I was thinking, man, the ultimate watch along for this match is you and I and Ducky, we sit down with Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo, okay? We watch this match and we press record just to get their reaction, what their son and nephew is doing with his career right now.
Well, don't get me wrong. I love the idea of the Fiends. Like, I love Bray Wyatt. I love...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just think that maybe it's difficult because he's such a good character actor. I don't know if it's difficult to book around him or if it's just that it has to just be Vince McMahon, because I've seen so many fan fiction ideas for The Fiend or Bray Wyatt in general that would have worked so well in this type of a situation. Even my ending that I told you guys to this match would have been so much better. But
no.
Yeah. Like, for those wondering at home, my ending was that they were going to play on the whole Man in the Woods story that Bray Wyatt told long, long ago before The Fiend was even a thing, where the ending of the match would involve, since Braun Strowman said during a promo that he was going to throw Bray Wyatt into the swamp and let the alligators finish him off, if he actually did that and then the alligators would swarm in and then Braun Strowman would like look at the alligators like feasting on Bray Wyatt, and then he would just walk away. And then after that,
the Fiend would then rise up from the swamp holding one of the alligators in his hand and just like to be like, oh, well, now you've unleashed something absolutely horrific and he's coming for you. So but instead now we got, in theory, Braun Strowman is still in the swamp and the Fiend has attacked him in the swamp. And I don't know how they're going to follow up on this, because like, if you take my ending into consideration, we can think that Braun Strowman walks away thinking he's victorious, but really right. The Fiend is now coming after him and he doesn't know it. And the Fiend, right. The Fiend can break at him at any moment. I think so much better.
Yeah. And then he can just attack him on Raw or whatever. Are they on Raw or SmackDown?
They're on SmackDown.
Oh, okay. Then they can just attack him on SmackDown and then they continue from there.
But with this, though, what they have now, Braun Strowman's still in the swamp. I don't know. It doesn't make it. So, like, now Braun Strowman's just going to inexplicably turn up again on an episode of SmackDown and be like, I was in the swamp, but I got out. I escaped the Fiend and blah, 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 blah.
I almost want to say, I'm looking forward to see where they go with this, but I don't know if I can sit through SmackDown and Raw anymore.
Looking forward is a it's a poor choice of words. More like, it's like watching a car crash at this point.
I'll let you guys fill me in on everything. Just to compare and contrast, the last little while, like, I get up and I pour my coffee, and while I'm having breakfast before I go to work, I've been flipping it on YouTube and I've been watching Mid-Atlantic Territory Wrestling in 1982-83, okay, which would eventually evolve into WCW. Okay. Big difference.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like, watching like later, like, I think I watched last night I actually watched reviews of some like Russo era WCW shows. And there was actually a graveyard match between Dale Torborg and Vampiro, which in retrospect was way ahead of its time, considering the matches like that nowadays.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And when you think the dying days of WCW like had bigger ratings than like Raw has now, it's just like
The ratings for Raw are at an all-time low. They're getting down close to 1 million. But Dynamite is at like 900,000. So they're almost like equal nowadays.
Uh-huh. So there was more people like when 605, like the WCW 605 program on TBS. Okay, and that was what, job matches for the most part, and we're talking throughout the 80s and all that. That they were drawing more people, you know, to that program than Raw is with their main eventers. Programs like the NWA Main Event, which was like, I guess, the equivalent now of Dark, except it was on actual cable TV and all that. Those were getting more than 1 million people than the million that Raw is. And those were job matches. Those were the second string Crockett guys against jobbers. And they're doing more. We picked the wrong time to start a wrestling podcast. I think I said this like our first episode. But we needed to do this 30 years ago. But
30 years ago I was only 4, so The first Jurassic Park hadn't even come out yet, so we're talking. Yeah.
So everything that's going on here, we kind of forgot to do the horns thing. Fighter Fest, horns up, horns down, horns in the middle.
I gave a praise. So I would say both for Great American Bash, Fighter Fest, and Fight for the Fallen, I would say horns up, definitely.
Okay. For the AEW stuff, I'm going to give it a little horns in the middle. Okay. at the end of the day, like, it just didn't seem like these big event. They just seemed like another Dynamite, which I enjoy. Okay. I didn't see any of the WWF stuff. You know, good for me. Mm-hmm. I'll do a Barry Horowitz pat on my own back. Although, like, I'm not going to bash NXT. I try to get as much of that in as I can.
I think
it's definitely the best brand that the WWF has going on. So I'm going to reserve comment about that. But I'm going to give horns up to Slammiversary. Just even though I didn't see every second of it, I saw a good chunk of it. And I really like where Impact is going.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where Impact Wrestling is going too. Now that they actually have a world champion again, like a legit world champion in Eddie Edwards.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to bring up, and I didn't get to it. What's your opinion? How are you with Eddie Edwards? They finally pulled the trigger on him with something like this. How are you for a world champion with him?
Well, he's been world champion before. He beat Bobby Lashley on an episode of Impact. Like a couple years ago.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
No, he's been world champion before, but now he's got this whole new look and new character, and I'm liking where he's going with it. I think Eddie Edwards is like, this reign could be a lot better than his first reign, I think, and I hope it will be. Like, I actually trust the writing team at Impact Wrestling as opposed to WWE. So I guess it's just a matter of seeing where it goes and seeing if they're going to involve any of these future endeavored guys in with it. Because now we got Gallows and Anderson there. We got Heath Slater, or just Heath. He's being called. Yep. Right now. Yeah. We got EC3, and we got Kurt Hawkins, now going by his real name, Brian Myers. And I think that's it.
Yeah.
No, Eric Young. Eric Young is back now too.
Yeah. That was awesome too.
Mm.
Just to see that. Yeah. So like, I never gave up faith on Impact. I watched it as much as I could all the way from the very start, when it was just like the NWA doing the weekly pay-per-views, all the way up to today. And, we're going to start getting rewarded with some really cool stuff, I think.
Yeah, I have high hopes. Like, I'm glad that, like, it's kind of like another ECW, you know? Like, if WWF is still WWF and WWE is like the new WCW.
In a lot of ways it is, but that's going to be another topic, yeah.
Or maybe WWE now is like WCW because they got all the money and they're like so big and up their own assets. And then maybe AEW is more like Attitude Era WWF.
Well, it's definitely something to ponder and go over. Yeah, because I think that in itself is going to be quite an interesting turnbuckle talk. For the future, right now, though, this episode's Turnbuckle Talk, my friend, I'm really excited for it. I'm glad that we're going to sit down. You and I discussed this because on our brother program, Radioactive Metal, the current episode as we speak, we sat down, we brought Ducky on to discuss this whole interesting situation between Chris Jericho, Le Champion, and Sebastian Bach, he of ex-Skid Row fame, where recently they kind of started this whole Twitter battle, and it might be kind of interesting to see where it's going. How much of this have you followed so far?
I've seen all the tweets between the two.
Right.
Yeah. And it just seems like Sebastian Bach, like, the whole thing makes Sebastian Bach just come off as the most insecure human being in the entire universe.
Right.
And, like, yeah, like, I, like, it just started off with, like, some, it started off with a fan asking Sebastian Bach his opinion on Chris Jericho's singing.
Then Chris or Sebastian Bach bashed Chris Jericho, insinuating that he was lip syncing all along and basically Milli Vanilli-ing the entire thing.
Right.
Like every time he performs live. I've never seen Fozzy live, but I've seen live footage. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like Jericho has a tenuous grasp on how to properly sing. Like, I'm not saying he's the best singer in the entire world, but he's also, right. He's no faker. Like, the guy's never faked a thing in his life. He's always been upfront and genuine with everything he does.
Right.
And, Chris Jericho even, posted a video of himself. Maybe it was trolling a little bit of him singing, proving to Sebastian Bach that he can sing. He posted a video of himself on Twitter singing the chorus to "You've Gone Wild."
"You've Gone Wild," yeah. I was just listening and watching that before we went on the air. Yeah, yeah. What I noticed though about Jericho's singing voice, he sounds like Chris Jericho. You know how some vocalists, when they start singing, especially like a death metal vocalist or whatever, they don't sound like their voice. Jericho does, and I think that's the kind of the telling thing.
Yeah,
that he's not Milli Vanilli-ing it. And I've seen Fozzy play live in an intimate setting, right then and there, front row center, and I can tell you he definitely wasn't lip syncing.
Mm-hmm.
So I can personally attest to that. And you're right. Like, I think Sebastian Bach is just, I don't know what it is. Like, I'm a Skid Row fan. I'm a Chris Jericho fan. I'm a Sebastian Bach solo fan. One of the things, so I'm following all of these careers, and they're kind of like fighting over nothing. Okay, because they're kind of going back and forth about who has more listens on Pandora or on Spotify.
The singer for Trapped.
Yeah. On Radioactive Metal, we went into that asshole as well, and all that. But it's like, okay, you guys are kind of fighting. I don't want to say over nothing. But
it's a Twitter spat. It's a social media spat. I guess Sebastian Bach had a bad day, decided to take it out on the wrong person.
Take it out on the wrong guy. And it's like, this though, like I said, I am a fan of Bach, but he's kind of dug himself into a corner over the years where, like, you walk into a room of people and say, in the industry or in the music scene, and hey, what's your opinion of Sebastian Bach? And everyone in that room, okay, is going to have something not very pleasant to say about him. Now, I've never interviewed him. I've never met him. I don't know him. I don't know for sure. Okay, but I can say, recently, there was an event. You and I were together where we were hanging out with a bunch of people from the scene, and Mike Deadly from Solenum kind of shared a story with me. And of course, Solenum is a local Winnipeg metal band that kind of put out some records, on some pretty reputable labels and all that. Well, he shared a story with me where he was working in one of our local venues when Skid Row, a post Sebastian Bach Skid Row, were in town supporting Kiss. And Skid Row walked into this venue where Mr. Deadly was working, and Deadly was like, okay, I kind of recognize these guys. Who are they and all that? And he introduced themselves, and they introduced themselves as Skid Row. And he's like, oh, okay, sorry, I didn't recognize you at first and all that. Sebastian Bach came up in conversation that he was having with the rest of Skid Row, to the point where they were talking about the worst things about Sebastian Bach. And I think you said Snake was the one from Skid Row that said the worst thing about Sebastian is that he breathes. Oh. Like, wow. Holy shit. Okay. Okay. I would never go that far. And like, I know there's bad blood. Okay. But for someone that you toured with and were in a band that was supposed to be your brothers to think that of you, that's gotta hurt. You know, and that should make you think, you know what, I better get my shit together, and I shouldn't be acting in my 50s, because he's not that much older than I am. Jericho's about my age, too. Maybe I shouldn't be acting like a 12-year-old on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like, I think Jericho shared, like, personal text messages that, like, Sebastian Bach was, like, sending to him after the fact. Because they're friends. They have each other's numbers. They're both celebrities. Like,
oh, yeah.
But, yeah, there was basically, like, a one-sided conversation of Sebastian Bach sending Chris Jericho just insults. Right. And, yeah, I don't want to say threats, but, yeah, basically just calling him a pussy and, like... But he, like, Sebastian Bach censors his own texts and tweets because reasons.
But yeah.
I think Jericho called him out on that, too, because even though Jericho is a good Christian boy, he can still say fucking shit whenever he wants to not feel bad about it. But yeah, he was like, yeah, the whole thing just, like, made it look like Sebastian Bach just had a bad day and just took it out on the wrong person.
On the wrong guy, yeah. Yeah, I'm even hearing, like, I haven't seen these tweets and all that, but I'm hearing reports that Bach, I don't know if he had too many that night, okay, but he's actually calling him out, saying that he's going to kick his ass. He's mm-hmm. going to kick Jericho's ass.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
I'm sorry. I just, I've shook Jericho's hand. I've been face to face with the man, and trust me, I'm not betting against him against anyone, because people can say, well, it's wrestling, it's fake, it's this, it's that. Okay, but these guys do a physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, you know, they are strong, and they, you know, I'm against some scrawny alcoholic in his 50s. Like, I'm going to put my money on Jericho, like, in a shoot fight.
People underestimate professional wrestlers. They say, oh, it's all fake. But really, it's like, you got to think of it more like actors who do their own stunts.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of stunts.
For sure. I'll never forget the time I was just at a local, wrestling show here at one of the local bars, and it was a Tuesday night. There wasn't too many people in the audience. One of the wrestlers got thrown outside of the ring, okay, and he's playing it up like he's hurt and all that, and there's no barricades and all that because it's a bar. And there's this one guy with a beer in his hand. He's had a couple. He's mocking kicking this guy. It was Robbie Royce, if you know that name. No, yeah. He's pretending and he's laughing to his buddies and all that, pretending that he's kicking Royce and all that. Well, I'm sitting there right at ringside, and I can hear Royce saying to this guy, like, back off, like, under his breath. Mm-hmm. Okay. But he won't. He's still doing it. And Royce is like, I'm warning you right now, back off. You know, get the fuck away from me. I'm to the point now where I'm like, okay, something is going down. I got up and I took a few steps back because I didn't want to have to testify in court or anything or say anything to the police. When Royce finally had enough of this asshole and just turned around and just took him right out, and he would totally be justified. You know, my point is, it's a show, but these wrestlers are tough son of a bitches. Okay, and I could totally see what Jericho would do to Bach, you know, like,
like, Sebastian Bach, just, like, even though he's only playing bars and stuff now, he's not playing the arenas like he used to, but his ego hasn't gone away.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing that kind of, that's what I was alluding to earlier in the conversation. What are these guys really fighting over? Okay, no one is selling any records.
No.
Okay, like, you know, it's all, oh, I have a couple more thousand Spotify listens than you do, so somehow I'm better than you and all that. And I'm sorry, but Sebastian Bach, okay, his days with Skid Row was more than 25 years ago. Okay, he hasn't sold a record. He hasn't, like, I have his solo records and all that, but he hasn't sold any in years. You know, Fozzy might be selling a couple albums to some wrestling fans. But
hardcore heavy metal fans, I don't think are buying up Fozzy.
Yeah, no one is, and it's not a slight against either of these artists because they're fantastic. My only beef with and it's not even their fault, but the way Judas is used on AEW and all that, like these are the heels, and everyone's singing along to the heel song.
That has actually gotten the new Fozzy album quite a few sales on online, like for digital format.
If not just a single. Yeah, and it'll lots of Spotify plays, I'm sure, which is probably a hell of a lot more than any of Bach's solo stuff.
No, but like, last time I saw Sebastian Bach live, which is really the only time I saw Sebastian Bach live, I think it was like 2014, 2015 when he played with, he played at The Oak.
Okay. Yeah, I was there.
You were there? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one spot in the show where there was like, for those who are not familiar with the layout of The Oak, there's the stage, and then right next to the stage, there's this like one table where people like, there's like, you can pull your stools up to it. And you put your drinks on it. Everybody had their drinks or glasses on that table. And at one point during the show, Sebastian Bach decided to walk on that table as a display of showmanship. And he started just stepping on people's glasses and drinks. Like, it was straight out of that scene from Anchorman when he was playing the flute. You know what I'm talking about?
No, but I can kind of see it, yeah.
No, he's just like, he's like walking along this table, just stepping on people's glasses and stuff. And it was just like, that part of the show was just like, I was like looking around and I was like, are you all seeing this? Like, who the fuck does this shit? Like, if I was performing on stage and I saw all these glasses sitting on the table, I'd just be like, no, not today.
Maybe once.
So he's ruining people's drinks and like making a bunch of broken glass, and then he asks for $200 for a meet and greet on his bus after the show.
Holy shit!
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right.
That being said, though, Bobby Jarzembeck's a really good drummer. I have ultimate respect for that guy. Like, he's a very skilled drummer, and I'm surprised he puts. Well, I'm assuming he gets paid enough to put up with Sebastian Bach shit.
Right.
With
all of this, we are wrestling fans, and of course, when stuff like anything that involves a wrestler, you got to think, is this a work? How much of this is a work, and are they building to something here? What do you think? Do you think they're just buddies? And
it's like difficult to say. Like, I kind of think it might be, but I don't know for sure. Because, like, why would Chris Jericho share personal texts from Sebastian Bach?
Right.
Like, why would he screenshot personal private texts?
Right.
And then post them online, if he wasn't intending on making this like a public thing involving like AEW.
Yeah. See, that's another thing with me. I'm thinking, okay, it might not have started out like it kind of might not have started out as a work or anything, but then as it kind of progressed. I think there might have been an unspoken agreement between the two that, okay, we're not going to get into a fight. This isn't going to go any further than Twitter, but let's play this up because we're both getting press from this.
Like maybe it started off and they were just like ribbing each other, and then like later on they were just like, okay, this is awesome. Okay, just like, send me a bunch of insulting texts and like I'll put it on social media.
Right. Do you think that in the event this was all a work, they're building up to something? Do you think that Bach actually has the cachet to be a major player on like an AEW pay-per-view? Like, I'm not saying he's going to get in the ring.
But I don't think a lot of people tuning in to AEW would know who the hell he is. Right. He's not exactly mainstream. So
not anymore. Yeah. And when he was, most AEW fans were toddlers, maybe not even born.
Yeah. Like when he was a thing. Yeah, like Slave to the Grind. When did that come out? Like, I think that was the last time he was a chart-top artist.
Well, yeah, 92, I think that came out. And then 94, there was the Subhuman Race record, which...
That wasn't bad. It was different, but it was not horrible.
Oh, it's a fantastic record, but no one else but myself bought it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then ever since... Then once Bach left... No one cared about any record new material with Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
And then both Bach and Skid Row, they're now nostalgia acts. They do the senior circuits now. They, you know, they're playing the old timers festivals.
Well, Bach's always had like incredible. Well, he has Bobby Jarvis back, like I said, playing drums on his records and touring with him. But on his records, he's got like guys like Steve DiGiorgio playing bass for him. So that's fucking awesome in and of itself. Like I'm not saying the guy is like musically incapable of putting out a good music. Far from it. I'm just saying his relevancy kind of plays a fact here. Like I'm not usually one to be like, oh well, you didn't sell this many records, so you suck.
Like, right.
Far from it. Seeing as how both of us have like a very close ear to the local scene, mm-hmm. and are more inclined to like that music more than popular music. But in the terms of professional wrestling, being in mainstream media kind of means something.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And it's just with Bach can make all the kick-ass records he wants and they could be the best thing and all that, but no one cares. No one, like, when he goes on tour, I don't even remember. I think he did, like, maybe the last time he was here, his solo stuff and all that, I think he did, like, one Sebastian Bach song, and the rest was all Skid Row stuff and a couple covers.
When I saw him, it was all just songs off of Skid Row and Slave to the Grind for the most part.
Right. Right. Yeah. So if you just looked at Bach on stage, okay, mm-hmm. and didn't pay attention to any other musicians, it would be like watching a Skid Row concert since they never split or whatever.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
So that's the way it is with a lot of bands too, when the vocalist has left and all that. And sorry to all of our wrestling only listeners that don't really follow the music scene and all that. We're kind of getting sidetracked because that's kind of what we are.
You could say that about several metal bands nowadays, like or that were like relevant in the 80s and 90s, but nowadays just play their old stuff, like Metallica and Megadeth.
Do they
play anything off their new albums when they go on tour? No, they play the classics.
Yeah, they'll do like maybe one or two songs from that record and then they'll do all the stuff. Yeah. And it's just like, we can't just attribute this to just metal bands or whatever, but any sort of artists that are doing new music today that have that extensive back catalog from the 70s and 80s, when that artist whether it's metal, rock, pop, when they go, hey, you want to hear a new one?
Yeah.
You can hear the crickets. And then next, you know, you can hear the crickets. People kind of look, they start looking around. You'll see a guy go for a beer. Another guy pulls out his phone. Huh. and all that. So bottom line, I don't think anyone really cares about Sebastian Bach's solo career.
Nope.
Apart from the nostalgia act and all that.
Well, maybe this is just his attempt to go back into relevancy again. Attacking Chris Jericho on cable TV every week to almost a million viewers.
Yeah. Well,
maybe I think that's what it all comes down to.
At the end of the day, it's just, and if nothing else, it gives programs like ours, like our brother program, Radioactive Metal, you know, and I'm sure a lot of the other other shows on the Shining Wizards Network here as well, they've all given their two cents.
Yep.
about all of this. So that's probably a good time to make our way, unless there's anything else you want to quickly throw out there.
As of right now, no.
Okay. Well, then how can people find us? How can people get a hold of us?
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/WrestlingNightInCanada, and you can find us on Instagram at WrestlingNightInCanada.
Right on, right on. And of course, Wrestling Night in Canada is proud members of the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com. Go there because it's your one-stop shop for all of your wrestling podcast needs. But not only that, there's a really cool metal program, our brother show, Radioactive Metal. We're active there. Our good buddy, Ducky, who on the latest episode as we speak, I believe I said this earlier, he came on to discuss this very thing to our music listeners, and it made for awesome conversation. But apart from wrestling and music on the Shining Wizards Network, there's all sorts of entertainment, comedy, pop culture. It's your one-stop shop for all of your pro wrestling needs. And of course, if you are listening to us through the Shining Wizards, off of the website, download it off of iTunes, wherever you find your podcasts, we do want to say through Shining Wizards, we are available on Spotify. So you're going, because I know a lot of podcast listeners now are just going straight to Spotify for all of their podcasting needs. So we are there. Wherever you want to check us out, we are around. Well, my friend, once again, thank you so much. I love these conversations.
Yeah, man.
Sit down, crack a beer, and just
fun to vent about you.
to vent and yell and scream, and we know we're never yelling at each other. We're yelling to each other.
We're agreeing about the things that we love, and we're fucking just venting about the shit that we can't stand that needs to be changed. it's therapeutic in a way.
Very, very much so. Very, very much so. So in the meantime and in between time, that's it. This has been another exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. I'm Snowy White.
And I'm Matt Copper.
Signing off.
And we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.